Introducing the NS Micro Clip-Free Tuner. It's a discrete headstock tuning solution that stays put and stays out of sight. Tune up quickly and discreetly.
Hey, this is John Bolger with Premier Guitar. I'm with Ian Hill of Judas Priest, and we're at the Municipal Auditorium in Nashville. Ian, I can't thank you enough for joining us today.
No problem. My pleasure. My pleasure indeed.
You are the founding member of the band that kind of invented metal in a way, right?
Yeah. It wasn't metal at the time. It was anything that we were listening to, really, that we were playing at the time. It's back in 1969.
Right. I mean, you created, basically created a genre.
Yeah, it sort of evolved into it over the years. You know, we were sort of basically heavy blues to start with, went into heavy rock.
Right.
And that evolved eventually into heavy metal, you know.
Yeah.
I think everything came together about 1980, something like that, with the British Steel. Everything was in place there. I mean, the sound, the direction, the look, the whole thing, sort of gelled on that album. And that was the direction we went in after that, you know.
So it's interesting, in 69 in Great Britain, there were all these great kind of blues rock bands. That was such a scene. And you were playing a Fender Jazz back then, right?
Yeah, I picked up the jazz. Well, let me say, I went through other things first. I started off with an old Framus.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Cool, the German-made...
You turn it up and it screams, you know. and then I went on to another semi-acoustic with an Epiphone Rivoli.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was an incredible piece of furniture, it really was.
Right.
It was lovely, it was beautiful. Yeah. But again, semi-acoustic, you couldn't whack it up. And I couldn't get much attack with it either, you know, because then I was playing with my fingers as well, and there was no back pickup on the Rivoli, so I couldn't even get the bridge pickup going.
Sure.
So that's when I started to play the jazz, and I picked that over the precision, basically because my fingers are short.
Right, that smooth neck, which actually this is a good segue into your own signature bass.
That's right. I mean, this is it's pretty parallel, the neck. There's not much. Sort of taper on it towards the nut there, you know. But it's just a beautiful bass to play. They're wonderfully made, the Spectres, you know. And PJ and Stuart were very kind to do a signature model for me, you know. It must be 86, something like that. And it was our producer, Tom Allen, that actually got me onto them.
Oh, really?
I went to see him. He was producing another band for half him. I can't remember who it is, but a Criteria in Miami, I just walked in. The band wasn't there, but there in the corner was one of these. It was the NS2, you know.
Yeah.
And I said, "What the hell's this?" You know, I picked it up and started to play with it. And I thought, "This is great."
Yeah.
And found the phone number for Stuart. It was in New York at the time. No, wait a minute. No, it wasn't. We got the phone number for Kramer, that they were distributing them at the time.
Sure.
And I said, "Oh, no problem, yeah." And they sent me two right there. I thought, "Wow, I haven't even got to buy them, which is great."
Well, you're a big deal.
Well, by then we were. I mean, the last bass I had was the Fender, which I had to go out and buy, you know.
Yeah.
Deals, this is wonderful. Yeah. Well, tell a lie, I did play Hamers for a bit, you know. I didn't get along with Hamers that well.
Yeah.
But anyway, and he sent me a couple of basses down, and they were beautiful basses. Small, but really well built, and quite heavy for the size, you know.
Yeah.
I think it helps with the tone a little bit, you know, keeps it rumbling around a little bit longer. The thing is with the American-built ones, they started to get expensive. And my two, the original ones that were in the first, within the first couple of hundred or so, started to get very valuable.
Sure.
And I'm thinking, I'm taking them on the road with me.
Yeah.
They're getting knocked around, they're in flight cases and stuff I do with them as well on stage, you know.
Yeah.
So I said to PJ, would you, you know, make me? They at this time they got a factory in Czechoslovakia as well.
Yeah,
it's like a cheaper model, the same sort of thing, but
sure,
but done in Czechoslovakia. I said, how about I get the wood bit made in Czechoslovakia, have it shipped back to the States, and you can put all the brasswork and the guts and the, you know, the electronics. He says, yeah, okay. So yeah, we'll do that. It won't cost as much for the people they're trying to sell them to, you know. And that's where the signature base came from, basically.
Wow, that's great.
And I almost told him, I don't need the back pickle because I never use it. Never. Everything is just like full forward and that's it.
Yeah.
But he put it on anyway, you know.
That's great.
But that's where it came from.
You know, so when you were building or designing your signature, did you make any suggestions about the neck, the feel on that?
I was perfectly happy with the NS2.
As
absolutely,
it came out.
Perfectly happy with it.
And you played that for quite a while before you actually
that's right,
did your SIG.
We're talking 10 years maybe. You know, they're right. They're
big years.
Yeah. That's right. All through
the
80s. Yeah, that's right. Like I say, it came about that they agreed to do it. And then I've never really got along with being an old fart, if I can say. You know, I'm very, very set in my ways.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm very used to four strings, the string spacing,
right,
and all the rest of it, you know.
Yeah.
And I've had a couple of five strings over the years, of which Hamer was one, and Inspector were kind enough to send me a couple of theirs. But it just felt awkward.
Sure.
And when you've been doing something for 40 odd years,
yeah,
you know. So I decided to just put the top four strings of a five string set onto a four string bass.
Great.
And do it that way. And if I need to go higher, I just go a little bit further up my neck.
Sure, it makes perfect sense.
It does, absolutely.
So essentially, you just buy a five string set, Stig, your guy, wires it up. And I guess you probably have to increase the nut size.
Yeah,
to
the gaps in here and things, but you know, where the string goes through on the tailpiece there.
And do you just switch according to the song?
Yeah, just switch over. Yeah.
So if you need that low B, you got.
Sometimes if I don't need the higher, I'll just keep the five on for a while. What I call the five, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
The five tuning, I'll just keep that on.
Yeah.
It helps with running off stage every two songs or so.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, and I like the fact that you kept the price of your signature down.
Because,
I mean, you know, because you've got so many fans that, like, want to buy that instrument. And
it knocked a couple of grand off the price, you
know.
Yeah,
that's
and
huge.
They're really just as good as, I shouldn't say this, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're just as good as the American ones, they really are.
Yeah.
But, you know, with labor costs what they are, I suppose, in Czechoslovakia, or what they used to be. Like they can do it a bit cheaper over there, you know.
Yeah.
So
that's great.
And of course, it's not so. They're hand built over here, you know.
Sure.
We're in Czechoslovakia.
Very labor intensive here.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, it totally makes sense. Now, do they only come in black? Because I've only seen these in black.
Yeah. Yeah. Mine do.
That's good, man. What's more Judas Priest than that? Yeah.
They do great colours. They really do. These wonderful things that show the grain of the ward. Yeah. And I thought,
just not on your base.
But it just wouldn't go down very well with our punters, I don't think. You know, so.
Now, I mean, your rig is fairly simple. You're pretty much just driving with a pick the whole time.
Yeah.
And pretty much with just a big, clean bass tone.
When you've got two guitarists that are very distorted, you know, you've got to cut through. Which is why I started playing with a pick. I was a finger player. I still do, you know, when I'm mucking around at home.
And what picks do you use?
They're 45s, 75s.
Okay.
Just ordinary nylon picks. And
nylon
special,
picks. Yeah. Okay. So not particularly heavy. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a few faster parts, you know, when you're pedaling quickly, and it helps with that.
Yeah.
You need something bright and clean to cut its way through to very distorted guitars, you know.
Sure.
And hence just a basic setup, that's all it is, you know. There's no special gizmos behind there, really.
Right. Well, I want to take a look at the limited gizmos, but this is very cool, your Taurus.
Oh, the Taurus pedals, the Thunder pedals, yeah.
Yeah. So how do you, I mean, it's amazing you can pull off playing here and
yeah, it gets a bit confusing from time to time, but yeah. I get it right most now.
so is this so you'll kind of hit a tonic there and then be playing?
Yeah, it's just a wash basically. You know, there's no real tunes on there. It's just playing the background rumble.
Sure.
For the heavier parts of some of the songs.
Yeah, you almost feel it more than you hear it.
Yeah, you know, the songs like the Sentinel, it's on there.
Sure.
Out in the Cold that we're doing on this tour. And a couple of just accents here and there, you know.
Yeah.
You bang, you're pressed out at the same time, you know.
When you really want to really bring the thunder.
That's right, yeah. When you need things to rumble about.
Yeah. Well, cool. Well, hey, let's go take a look at your amps.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, now we're backstage with your amps, effects, the whole rig. Kind of take us through what you're using here.
It's comparatively very simple, really. This is just a standard Boss ME50B.
Sure.
Multi-effects pedal. I was using this on some of the songs, fadings and things like that. You know, you press a button, you hit the string, and it'll fade in and something.
Yeah.
Some things like that. Let me see. There's a piece in Green Man Alishi where the bass nearly pretty much takes the lead on one of the middle eights.
Yeah.
And it's like a octavider. You get the two octaves, and that's about it, really.
Yeah.
The rest of the distortion comes from the guitars.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. You're one little bit of sonic weirdness.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
That's it.
And the rest, I mean, SWR rig, basically.
You're running three SWR speaker cabinets.
Yeah, the Triad speaker cabinet. It's got a 15-inch, an 8, and a horn. And the two amps, I can't even remember how powerful they are these days. Yeah, there's a 15 and two 9s. The two 9s are the backups.
Okay.
Not that I've ever needed them. I mean, SWR has been very, very reliable over the years. In fact, the reason I started to use these, back in the 80s, I had these enormous folded horn cabinets. I mean, you can live in one, you know, if you want
to.
And multiple amplifiers that were all tuned on one.
right.
And they started to fall apart. You know, they'd been on the road so many times and dropped from such a height. And I needed to get into something else, and I didn't want anything that bulky.
Yeah.
I mean, technology come so far forward, you know, speaker design.
Sure.
You know, you used to have these great big 18s, anything lower than that, I used to pop them regularly, you know.
Yeah.
But with the new speaker designs, like I say, modern technology, I could get away with something smaller.
Right. So efficient. And, well, and this might be small on your terms, but for the average guy, it is a major rig. Compared to what you were playing, sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's smaller in size, you know, about the same capability.
Yeah.
But that was it. I went through several amplifiers and rigs. And what we were playing and some of the hot places we were playing, a lot of them were cutting out.
Right.
And I think my old roadie, Greg Morgan, known as Weasel, he said, why don't you try these guys, you know? So we did, and I've been with them ever since. And that must have been, it was in the Ripper year, so it must have been probably 96, seven, something like that. Maybe a bit later than that.
Well, that's a long run.
But I've been really happy with them. It's the same stuff, you know. I mean, nothing goes wrong with them. I think I blew one speaker once.
Wow.
And I think that because we'd been laid off, we weren't working for a while, and one of them got damp. I think that was the reason. You know?
Huh. And I like the way you've integrated your cabs into your stage. They're not even, the stage is actually the case.
Yeah. Everything's strapped into a dolly. And these are just rolled out at the end of the show and just rolled straight into the truck, you know.
Makes it easy for your guys.
Yeah. That's our production manager. That's that's Marty Borg. He's a genius when he
comes to stuff like that. Yeah, that's great. Hey, before I forget, what strings are you using?
These are DRs, starting from 105 and I think, I don't know what the others are, 105 up to about a 40, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Black Beauties. And we used to color code them at one time, so I know which bass I'm picking up.
Right. Yeah. So
you've got the silvers on the five string set.
So if it's silver, you're down to a B.
Yeah.
If it's black,
it's an A sharp.
Yeah.
But and the blacks on.
You're down a half step.
Sorry?
You're down a half step?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's right. That's, that's very metal.
And the DR strings were great. They were amongst some of the first coated strings.
Yeah.
And I can get two shows out of one set. At one time, I was changing them every show.
Really?
Because of the sweat and the heat.
Sure.
You'd play it the next day, it'd be dead.
Wow.
Just thunk, thunk. So, but no, you can get two shows easily out of these. You know,
they're
good strings.
So, as far as you run four basses, a redundancy for each tuning. Do you have a favorite, or do they all feel pretty consistent?
They're all pretty consistent. Yeah. I do have a number one bass. I don't know which one I've got. I think they are marked somewhere. Yeah, A, B, B and A are the other two.
Yeah.
There's no difference in them. It's just a.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just so Stig knows which one he's tuning, I think, sure. More than anything, you know.
Sure.
But they are exactly the same.
Yeah, that's good.
They're set up the same, and, you know, the action and whatever. Yeah.
Great.
That, you know.
Well, Ian, I can't thank you enough for joining us today. Yeah.
It's been great. I've never done anything like this before, you know. It really is you know, an experience for me. I appreciate it.
Well, like I said, you're a big deal.
Yeah.
Okay, till next time. You're gonna get it a little copyrighted for
you. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Maybe three notes.
Any
more than that.
It was totally you until that tip of the hat to the Mighty Van Halen.
Oh, yeah, of
which
course. It just went there. It just, you know, so there you go.
Yeah, that was great. All right. Hey, with Richie Faulkner of Judas Priest. Man, Richie, it is great to meet you, man. I love your work. Great to hear, like, some proper metal shredding right here.
Thank you very much, man.
At painful volume.
The wedges aren't even on yet, so I mean, that's only kind of like a third of the volume.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just about here at the moment. My ears are gone.
I think a filling knocked out of my tooth right then on that first.
As it should be.
Yeah.
As it should be.
Man, okay, tell me about. Let's start with this guitar.
Well, this is a guitar I've had since 2011.
Right when you started.
Right when I started, yeah. We realized we needed a Floyd Rose guitar. I didn't have one at the time. I had a couple of Les Pauls and stuff like that. I had an SG, and I didn't want to put a Floyd on a Les Paul. It was too much wood to take out. The SG seemed a bit too thin, and it's Judas Priest. So I thought, what a great opportunity to put one on a V. And so I asked the guys at Gibson if they could do me something, and I gave them a spec, and it wasn't like this originally. It had just the single scratch plate. It was the 50s shape.
Yeah.
And the 50s, like, half scratch plate. But it was bound, neck, body, head, the block inlays, and the EMGs. And I think at the time it was 81, 85 EMGs. The input jack in the top wing. And that's basically what it was. And since then, since 2011, I've just been customizing it with buckle rash, and I've got the double scratch plate on it. I was looking for something that kind of gave a different aesthetic,
yeah,
but also served a purpose as well. So underneath this, all the paint's gone, because I used to scratch it off with the cuffs that, you know, obligatory with the Priest.
Yeah, yeah.
So not only is it sets it apart looks-wise, it kind of serves a purpose as well. So then I changed the pickups. These are 57, 66 EMGs. One volume knob. And that's pretty much it. There's stuff like, I didn't want the diamond on the headstock, because Jimi Hendrix didn't have he had a Flying V at the Isle of Wight, and it just had the Gibson logo, no diamond logo. So I didn't want that on there. As you can see, it's just been worn down over the years.
Like high miles.
I mean, it's really worn down here. I'm not quite sure what that's from. It's like chains and studs and stuff like that. And the neck's been all worn down. So That's the main V.
An ebony fingerboard, right?
Ebony fingerboard.
Mahogany body?
All mahogany, yep. And that was, I was using it on a song called Halls of Valhalla at the time, and I just thought that was a good idea at the time. Yeah. And it stayed on there. Got some ring stuff up here from Rings, which Hendrix had as well, you know.
Sure.
Lock and Nut. It's kind of stripped down. As I said, it hasn't got the double volume or tone or anything like that. It's stripped down in some regards, but in other regards, with the Floyd, with the EMG, with the block inlays, it's kind of like a souped up version, you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
And yeah, so I've been using that since I got it, and use it. This is the main V, really.
That's your number one.
That's the number one V. And this is the one that the signature is based on as well.
That's a perfect segue. Let's talk about the signature.
Let's get it.
Okay, so this is your signature.
This is a signature. So this is based on the number one V that I just showed you, and it's pretty much an identical copy. It's got the double scratch plate, the 5766 EMGs, and it's got the, again, it's got the input jack on the wing there. I mean, on the other Vs, on the 67 styles, and some of the 50s styles, the input jack's down here.
Yeah.
So you put it through your strap, and you've got like a bit of a lead trail coming here. With all the jumping about, I don't do so much of anymore, getting a bit older, but it's just easier to put it there. It's a lot more streamlined.
Yeah,
it's out
clean.
The way. But yeah, apart from that, it's a direct copy. The only difference is on this one, as you saw on the Gibson, all the paint has started to come off the back of the neck. And I didn't, you know, it looks a bit unsightly. I'm fine with it, but yeah. Someone who's buying a new guitar off the shelf, they might not like that. So we wanted to come up with a way of recreating the feel of the paintless, varnished neck, varnishless neck, but still looking attractive. And the master builder came up with a satin idea.
Oh, that's great.
I mean, ironically, this one's going shiny because I use it so much.
Wow.
That's the funny thing.
That doesn't feel like a finish.
No, originally it was more like this. It was matte satin, but because I use it so much, it's starting to get shiny,
sure.
Ironically. But so we did that, and it works perfectly.
When your tech hands you a guitar, if you're not looking, can you tell the difference?
Yeah, I can tell the difference all of them. I mean, yeah. I had a couple of 1974 Customs,
yeah.
Same year, and they were totally different. I mean, every guitar, in my opinion,
sure.
is different, you know what I mean? So you can always tell, especially if you're this close to them. You know, you've got a relationship with them. We use them every day on these sort of conditions. You get to know them pretty quickly. So this is actually a bit heavier than the other V. And I've got another one of these, which is white, which is slightly lighter than this one. So I can tell. And I've got slightly different, the white one has got a slightly more snappier tone, which is great. All tools are different, and they do different jobs. That's basically it. And it's got the battery compartment in the back, which we had to actually put in the original, because that wasn't the original.
Right.
Just for ease of use for the EMG battery to go in there.
So it comes with, your signature comes with those EMGs in
there? It comes with the EMGs in the battery compartment, so you can just put the battery in there easily, and you're ready to rock again. So yeah, that's that one. And that's the main signature axe that I use.
Love that.
This was, I don't know if anyone's heard it before, but when I joined the band, my name is Faulkner, and it comes from Falconer. And we used to train, fly, and keep falcons back in the day for like dignitaries and royalty and stuff like that, apparently.
Really?
Yeah, so super cool. I'm actually looking at getting my falconry license so I can do the same,
really?
Just to carry on the tradition. Yeah, yeah.
That's great.
But Rob Halford picked up on the name, and he said he wants to call me the Falcon because of that reference. And I've just kind of used that really as a little bit of a trademark. And it's on picks. I've got it, I think I've got it. Ironically, not that one. I've had it on picks and, you know, clothes, like tour jackets and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it's just become a regular thing.
That's great, man. What a cool reference.
Yeah, and it came from him as well, so it was organic.
That makes it all the cooler.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And also, it's got the Priest logo at the top there next to the Epiphone logo.
Yeah.
I mean, if anyone wasn't aware, it's Judas Priest, but you know what I mean? But,
they're aware.
Yeah, exactly.
if they're buying that guitar, they're aware.
Yeah. And the V's always been a part of the Priest heritage, you know, with KK Downing.
Totally.
I've always been a Michael Schenker fan, KK fan. Randy Rhoads, Zach played a V, you know, there's loads
Hendrix.
Of people.
Yeah.
Hendrix, Hetfield, Kirk Hammett, you know, all those guys. So it was a perfect opportunity, really, to stretch your wings of the V, you know what I mean?
Yeah, too cool.
That's the main signature.
Okay, perfect. Well, let's talk about some of your non-Vs you're touring with.
Okay, well, the first one I've had for a while before I joined Priest.
Yeah.
This one, can't remember when I got this actually. I think this was it was a few years before I joined the band, and this used to be black.
Really?
Yeah, so I bought this on eBay. So it just goes to show you, you can buy guitars on eBay that, you know, stand up to the rigors of the road, you know.
Or at least you could 15 years ago.
Oh yeah, true. True, that's true. This is a 1976 Les Paul Custom. And as I said, it used to be black. And when I joined Priest, I painted it white. And that was only, well, it's 8 years ago now, but it's got a lot more, it looks like it's a lot older than an 8 years paint job, you know.
Right.
We use them, you know what I mean? We use them properly. So all the paint's gone off the back, and it's all checked at the front here. You can't see it on the camera, but it's got loads of, it looks like it's, you know, a 20-year-old guitar. Paint job, should I say.
Yeah.
It's got the Randy Rhodes pickup selector switch there in gold. And also, John, the most important thing about this guitar, I shouldn't really be telling anyone this, but all the knobs, all the volume knobs and the tone knobs, they all go up to 11. So it's Nigel Tufnell approved. I've just got to get the voice right. I'm almost there.
that's a pretty good Nigel voice.
Yeah, it's close. but apart from that, it's a 76, so it's got the maple neck as opposed to the mahogany.
Right.
Mahogany. the ebony fretboard. Apart from that, it's a stock Les Paul that's been, again, customized over the last few years.
Love it, man. And pickups are?
EMG 8185.
Okay.
Standard, you know, sure. A few people use them. I put them in really when I was playing bars and clubs around London, and they just ticked all the boxes really. They're incredibly versatile. I don't think EMG get enough credit really for being, they're seen as metal pickups, but I've played blues on them, I've played heavy rock, soft
sure.
rock. We used to do covers in bands with this guitar, and you go everything from the Stones through to Deep Purple and Sabbath and Priest.
Yeah.
So they can handle anything. So yeah.
Do you find yourself, when you're making the adjustment from the V to the Les Paul, V you've got one volume, and then you get over here and you've got two volumes and two tones. Do you ever get a little like, which is which?
Not really, I mean.
Because you've logged so many miles on this here.
Exactly right, yeah. Exactly right. They almost become part of you, you know. The only thing I can't get used to, and I'll show you in a minute, is I can get used to the switch up here and the V down here. I've got an Explorer and the switch was here. I can't get used to it, it's too far away.
It's a good, okay, that's a perfect segue. Let's look at this Explorer, okay.
So this is the Explorer.
Love it.
And as I was saying, I've moved the switch from this position to this position, which is basically the same that I've got on the Vs, really.
Yeah.
It's got the single volume knob and the switch is pretty much in the same position. This one I bought off the shelf in the Music Zoo in Roslyn. And it's been customized, as I said, with the switch. The EMGs I've put in, they're 5766 as well. And it's a nice fat neck on this one. And this is a Richlite fretboard, as opposed to ebony. And it's just a classy looking guitar.
Yeah, I love it.
And I've never really been familiar with Explorers before this tour. And I just thought something different, something classic. And so, yeah, I got this Explorer. Customized it a bit, and it's just a classy looking metal guitar, you know.
Great guitar
with a big fat neck.
And that switch makes so much sense because when you're playing in, you do that quick switch.
Yeah.
And it's just seamless, and your tone just got really warm all of a sudden. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
I think people are different, and they like things in different combinations or different placements and stuff
sure.
like that. It's just what you get used to, and the majority of my guitars are down here, apart from the Les Paul. So I just keep it in the same position. And that's pretty much it. And then we've got some backups for the signature, and
sure.
I've got a hardtail V in there as well. But these are the main guitars.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Well, cool. That's great. You're totally Gibsoned up.
Absolutely. yeah.
Well, hey, this is actually a good segue. Let's start talking about some of your effects and amps and all that jazz.
Okay.
Now, right here at your feet is your basic your ground control.
Yeah.
And a couple pedals. Why don't you kind of explain a little bit here, and then we'll. And your cabs are behind us, crazy loud.
They are. They're hissing away. There. Yeah. It sounds like you're at the beach and the tide's coming in.
Yeah, an angry god is behind us. Yeah.
So, but it's pretty. I mean, it's a pretty easy setup. They're all pedals. There's no rack effects or anything like that. There's as it says on here. There's a chorus. A Phase 90, which I think's out at the moment. I think that's another delay. And a chorus, reverb, gate, delay, the fish and chips.
Is the fish and chips?
Well, I'm not very happy today, to be honest with you. There's no chips in catering. No chips in catering, but if anyone's seen it before, when you click the chips button, our lovely catering staff bring us up a plate of chips, you know, and fish, if you're into that. So, but apart from that, so the main sound, main rhythm sound is just a bit of chorus, and that's it. All the distortions come from the amplifier.
Let's hear it a little bit.
So that's quite chorus off.
What chorus is that?
It's an MXR.
Oh.
Micro chorus or
sure.
mini chorus, one of the one, little yellow one.
Yeah.
This is without it. So I always find a chorus gives a little bit of EQ.
Sure.
That you can't get out of a regular EQ, I find. It just gives it a bit more color, a bit more warmth, a bit more movement.
It gets big.
Yeah, and I just keep it on most of the time. That's that, and then there's the main delay, which is also an MXR, I think it's a carbon copy, it's an Ogre. It's an Ogre delay, which I bought in Japan. I'll show you it in a minute. There's like an alien robot skull. It's wicked.
Yeah.
I think this is the Ogre, so this is a digital delay. That's basically what that's on. And eight is the other... So the other delay, we only use it once in the set. It's for a part and victim of changes. I think the Ogre is in the back. This one is, I think it's a Boss digital delay. It's in the front, which I don't normally use, but it's quite an obnoxious delay. It's in the front and it's quite loud. So we kick this in for victim of changes, which is...
Those trails are great, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So and we literally only use it for that one section of the show, but it's, you know, I've said this before, but they're 50-year-old songs, some of them, you know, and I think people have grown up with them, and it's important to get those little nuances right. You know?
Right. Well, that's the cool thing about your position, because you manage to play, you know, to honor what came before you, but you also do your own thing, which is cool to do them both.
I think you kind of have to, and what they stand for as well, what they stood for, was about doing your own thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Against the grain and all that sort of stuff. So,
totally.
So you've got to kind of, I grew up with the band as well, and you know what it means. You know what it means to be a Priest fan, and now being a part of the band, to take that forward. So you couldn't just, obviously, there's motifs in there from Ken's stuff, but you've got to kind of put your own thing in there as well, you know. Also, there's a reverb in there which we've put in recently for this set. This we use on a clean channel on Take These Chains, which is from the Screaming for Vengeance record. And it's quite a...
Oh, yeah.
Again, it's quite obnoxious.
Right.
But,
yeah, that's not a subtle verb.
No, but it's like that on the record, and it gives like a sort of atmospheric, sort of dreamy quality, which without that, it kind of misses it, you know?
Sure.
So again, that gets clicked in for that, and then it's out for the rest of the show.
Love it. It's cool to have an effect that's actually a proper effect. You know?
Yeah, without
a
doubt.
And
that's pretty much it.
Except for there's these two swirly bits over here.
Oh yeah, of course, there's a Jerry Cantrell wah.
Yeah.
Which for me, I don't like the wahs too cutting at the top end on the toe down position.
Yeah.
So you can back a little bit of that harshness off. So this is I'll show you on the clean channel so you can. So it's just a bit warmer on the top end.
Sure.
Doesn't get too bitey. And this
you've
is
got a season to taste, right?
Yeah, exactly,
than just,
And it doesn't have too many bells and whistles. It's, you know,
right.
You can have too many knobs and, you start chasing your tail, you know?
Yeah.
But this one's just got one knob for that purpose, and that's fine with me. And this is the Jim Dunlop Rotor Vibe. I don't know if you can get them anymore in this form, but it does that kind of rotary speaker.
Yeah.
And again, yeah, that's something good. We use just in Victim of Changes, is the midsection is.
That's great.
Especially that.
And I like that, and you're a quarter inch cable guy.
Yeah,
straight.
I've always felt weird without one.
Right.
It just, I'll probably get used to it.
Yeah.
But a lot of people say it changes the tone. Anything in a signal chain obviously does change the tone. The main thing for me about all of this is the way it feels, really.
Right. Yeah, if you're not comfortable, it's not going
to
sound.
And when it's not, when you don't feel like you're plugged in, it just throws me enough to think about something else, and I shouldn't be. You know, I should be thinking about this.
Right, right.
So yeah, I've always used a cable. Glenn's always used a cable, well, since I've been in the band. And I've just kept it that way, really.
Yeah. So. Perfect. Well, hey, let's take a quick look at your amps and pedals over here. Okay, we're now at amp and pedal land. Why don't you first tell us about these amps?
Well, the amps are Engel Powerball 2s, which is the second Powerball edition they did. I've used them ever since we joined Priest in 2011, and these are the same heads that I've used since then. They're just, I mean, German engineering, they're just roadworthy, they've never gone down.
Do you change tubes very often?
I've changed them once.
Wow, man.
Yeah, yeah, if I'm not mistaken. I'm mistaken.
Maybe you changed them once. How often did you change them?
But
they always get a fresh set at the beginning of every tour. And on a 18-month tour, probably only needs to do it once.
Oh, there you
okay.
go.
Okay.
So semi-wrap.
Yes. Yeah.
But they're again super reliable. They do the job. When I joined Priest, I needed a dedicated clean channel, dedicated rhythm channel, and dedicated lead channel. And it all had to be interchangeable with the effects loops and everything that we've got in here. And they've just been great, really. As I said before, all the distortions and everything are coming from the amplifier.
Now, are you running one as a backup, or are you running them in one amp and then the other's a backup, or are you running them in stereo?
One's a backup. Yeah. One's a backup. So we've got a main head, and if anything goes wrong, you know, which it rarely ever does, and it's usually not the amps, it's usually something in the wiring or a battery goes down, whatever. We'll put the other one on, but they're identical, identical settings. And I remember once we used the main one for months and months and months, didn't we? And we tried the brand new head to compare the wear on the tubes, and it was exactly the same. So the one that had been used for 6 months, night after night for 2 hours, was still nice and fresh and compared with the new one. So they're great.
And what cabs are you running this through?
They're just regular straight. Engel cabs. I couldn't tell you what's in them.
Yeah.
I can't, what speakers are. I don't know if they're 30s or
vintage
30s. But yeah, they're great amps for metal, and I know people that play rock on these and blues and whatever, so they're pretty versatile as well. But they do the job for what I need, and they've been there again for 8 years. So yeah. And that all links up. This is my Tech 80s switcher. Sometimes parts of the show I'll ask him to switch for me if I'm out the front and can't make it back.
Sure.
You know, for the show of it all, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
rather than running back, staying out the front, and then 80 can change it for me. And that all goes through a switcher into all the pedals. And I said before, it's all old school, you know, pedals. They're just not on the floor. So we've got a tuner, which is debatable if it works sometimes. It's so loud I can't tell anyway. That's the long delay. That's the Boss digital delay that we use on Victim of Changes.
Sure.
The Phase 90 I don't think is in at the moment, or maybe it is. The chorus that's on all the time, that's the Micro Chorus MXR. That's a, I don't know what that is. It's a noise suppressor to suppress the noise, and we make some of that.
Yeah.
That's the reverb, the MXR reverb, and it's on the Epic setting, which is quite fitting.
Yeah, that it did sound epic.
And this is the regular delay we use, which is the Ogre delay pedal. And
love that.
Yeah, I mean, I've said it before. We saw this in Japan. Me and AD went out shopping for guitars and effects, and we saw this. I'd never seen one before. And whatever it did, it was coming home with me.
Yeah, you didn't even plug it in. Like,
no, exactly.
I'll take it.
Exactly. I mean, how could you not? It's a beautiful thing, well made. And we put it in at the Budokan, I think, in 2015. So, and it's been in there ever since. Yeah, yeah.
How perfect is that? Yeah. Budokan. Yeah, that's good.
So, and that's pretty much it. Apart from the two expression pedals out the front, the wah and the Rotovibe, everything else is this. So it's just basically chorus, delay, and a bit of reverb. And that's pretty much it.
And Voodoo Labs power for it, looks like. Is it Voodoo Labs power?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Power too.
Oh, we've got, there's one rack effect. It's the Crybaby Rakwa.
Okay.
I've got a couple of them
around.
Oh,
when you're out front.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I've got one Jerry Cantrell on the foot pedal.
Yeah.
What do you call it? Pedal board.
Yeah,
that's it. And then I've got one controller out the front and then another controller on one of the risers. Yeah. So three wires in all, and it's all controlled through that.
Great. Well, hey, man, such a pleasure meeting you. You guys are going to do sound check any second now, so we got to get out of here. But what a treat.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
Great, man.
See you again.